Okay, first things first. I'm not sure how in religious class it goes, but with me, everybody has to speak. I can't handle otherwise, because that shyness has to go. It's not that anybody wants to confront anyone and embarrass. There's no such thing. We are all in the same boat. Nobody's upper, nobody's higher, nobody's lower. Nothing like that. We all are in the same boat, and so we all need to understand the question, the reason to ask question is not necessarily to understand if you have understood the subject matter, but the question is asked with the idea that you might shed a little different light on the subject. You see, that's what this group is all about. If somebody just sits and lectures for half an hour, 45 minutes, then everybody closes the eyes and then sleeps halfway through 15 minutes, that is not fun. That is not fun. The idea is to understand what Vedanta is before we move on to next chapter, which is, I think it says, oh God, come on, please, please, please. Knowledge is yours, make it happen, or something like that. Anyway, I don't have the text. Tony, come on, my man, you're the only one with the text. What is the next chapter? Title of it.
The next is
24th or 27?
27.
I thought it was 27. That's what Anilji said. In any case.
Life is yours.
Life is yours. Then what? Then what? Life is yours, then what?
Yeah,
it's 24. No, no. Is that it? I thought there was a little longer title there. Anyway. So now, if you understand what is Vedanta, then you understand what this life is all about. And so before we say, life is yours, handle it, Vedanta chapter has to be fully understood. The word Vedanta means the end of Vedas. Anta means end. Veda means Veda, the texts, the scriptures. So what is the end of scriptures? The end of the scriptures, like she said, is the knowledge. The books, if they are read and not digested, then it becomes knowledge of a parrot. Whatever you teach the parrot, he repeats that. So some of us have amazing ability to repeat what we've heard. But that is not your knowledge. It becomes your knowledge when the full understanding of what it is comes, and based on that understanding, the conviction comes. Without the conviction, that knowledge is no good. It is still the knowledge on the books, and none of us are going to benefit. So it has to become part and parcel of our lives. That knowledge, once acquired, has to be made our own. When that knowledge becomes our own, life is blissful. So now I can ask this young lady here. Yes. Who are you? Whatever comes in your mind, say that. Okay, don't be shy. That's the only way you will learn. Otherwise, you won't learn. So, day in and day out, who do you think you are?
I'm like a living light.
No, who are you? Yes, I'm asking you a very simple question. Yes, ma'am.
If you ask me, I would say that I'm the mother.
You're the mother?
Mm-hmm.
See, now, that's a very correct answer in certain contexts. Now, she also is a daughter. That statement is also equally important. She also is our classmate. So that's another title. If she has family, then she also would be a wife, could be a husband, could be a son, father, grandfather. So many titles. But is that what you are? No. Why not? Because that is the role you play in that particular relationship. So what is your name?
Rosa.
Rosa, what a beautiful name. Wow. Rosa. So how do you know you're Rosa? This is important to me. How do you know that you're Rosa? You firsthand don't know that. Right? Because somebody said you're Rosa when you were like 2 days old. He said, oh, Rosa, you're so sweet, a baby, la la la. Something like that. Right? Like we do to our children. So then you thought you are Rosa. And then over a period of time, people kept hammering, you are Rosa. You are Rosa. You are Rosa. And you all of a sudden said, okay, I'm Rosa. So if there were 1,000 people standing and somebody on the microphone said, where is Rosa? You will be the first one to raise the hand, right? But that's not what you are. You see. So role playing in different contexts is one thing. But our fundamental nature, which is what we are, is very different. It does not change. This role playing changes. Mother, son, daughter, father, friend, blah, 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 blah. Person remains the same. And that is what Vedanta teaches us. That's exactly what Vedanta says you are. But we are so brainwashed that it's very hard for us to think we are something different than what we think we are. And so Vedanta says, you are that all-pervading life spark. Whatever you call it, Brahman, the Lord, whatever name comes to you, depending on your religious traditions. It's immaterial. What is that enlivening entity because of which we appear to be who we think we are? One day, this wonderfully talking, nice gray beard, long hair, one day this guy is going to lie on the floor, and the same exact guy, there's no change, but now the mouth doesn't open, the eyes don't open, the body doesn't talk, it doesn't move, this, that. And everybody says, get rid of him. Quickly, get rid of it. So if this is what you are, or so you think, why would you get rid of it? You understand? So right then and there, you know you don't accept it, or in your day-to-day life, you've forgotten that, but you know right away that this is not who you are. Otherwise, you wouldn't get rid of it. In 92, I went to Moscow and went to see Lenin's, tomb. And his body is stuffed and sitting there. He was such a rogue guy when he was around. But that big body sitting there in a nice looking tomb, can he do anything? No. Nope. Bye-bye. So that is not Lenin. The life spark in us that makes these hands move, that has this mouth talking, the eyes seeing, the skin, touch, feeling, tasting, all that. Who allows that to happen? So if you say, my body, my eyes see this. So then what you see, for example, Tony's recording machine. You see the recording machine. So this is the scene, S-E-E-N. and you are the seer, S-E-E-R, right? But you know that eyes don't see. It is the mind that makes the sense organs sense what they are sensing. So then now all of a sudden we realize the eye is the seen and the mind is the seer. But then we know from all your studies here that mind has no independent authority. The intellect is the authority that directs the mind to do what happens in the world by this body, the interaction. So now all of a sudden, we realize that the mind is seen and the intellect is seer. A couple of more steps in between, we'll bypass them. But that intellect cannot do a thing by itself unless it is enlivened. And now we see that the intellect is the seen, S-E-E-N, and that enlivening spirit is the seer. The beautiful thing is that seer can never be seen because it's an absolute seer. All this that we went through were relative seers. In certain context that held good. But in the ultimate analysis, that enlivening spirit is the seer. And that is common in each one of us. You are a wave, you are a wave, you are a wave, you are a wave. Each one of us is a wave in the ocean. Now tell me, being an intelligent, being intelligent people that we all are, I assume, tell me, can the waves exist independent of the ocean? For any wave to say, I can exist and do whatever I want to do, I don't need the ocean to help. No, because the wave arises on the ocean, is sustained by the ocean, and ultimately it merges back into the ocean. Ocean is the enlivening entity. But in the ultimate analysis, it is the water. The water is the enlivening entity that makes these waves possible. Some of them are so beautiful, and some of them have big titles like tsunami. They cause so much of destruction. But even they have to pass. And because we are rugged people, over a period of time, we forget about the destruction. We rebuild. We go on. But in the context of what we are trying to learn, that enlivening spirit, just as the ocean in the waves, is exactly the same entity in each one of us. Once this is understood, intellectually first, and then once the understanding is converted or turned into conviction, then something fantastic happens. We don't see others as others. We see them as us, an extension of us. Right. So now you have moved from individuality to totality. Your vision has expanded, has become more inclusive. It is not that you don't do this day in and day out. We do this. A beautiful lady like this, a few years back, dressed up like wonderful and then running around in the streets, if her husband today, if he ran into her, he wouldn't know who this is. But one day they met. They liked each other, they loved each other, they got married. And now that husband or this wife would give anything for that spouse. Why? Because that's mine. That's me. Right? Lo and behold, we have family now. We have children. And again, we have extended that circle. Now we would give anything for those children. Why? Because that's me. I see me in it. So we know how to do this. We have just stopped short of going forward and including everyone in it. You see? So from individuality to totality, when you reach there, in the technical language, it is called karma yoga, the yoga of action, and also bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion. These two together. Now what happens? Why do we get agitated? Sir, why do we get agitated? Other people. See? Who gives you aggravation? Other people. So you have likes and dislikes. You have likes for those who are yours, or that which is yours, and you have dislike or aversion for that which is not yours, or those that are not yours. But when this feeling gets hold of you, that I am totality, first the feeling is, I am the ocean. And then one step higher, the highest, I am the water, the source of life for the waves. So when we understand what have we done from individuality to totality, to singular existence. Everything is me. There is nothing different. Absolutely nothing that's different than me. It just looks different because it has a different form, different shape, different name, different function. Nonetheless, it's exactly the same as who I am. Once that understanding and conviction comes, all the likes and dislikes are gone. What is the biggest problem in our life? Likes and dislikes. Right? We, and our entire life is wasted in that. Likes and dislikes. We want more of what we like. We don't want to do anything with what is what we dislike. Right? This has to go. Dislike for what? When the tongue gets bitten by the teeth, you take a hammer and break the teeth? Has anyone done that? No. Why? Because there's one and the same. They are mine. Same thing has to happen. Our vision has to become bigger and bigger and bigger, and we have to be so inclusive that we hardly, if any, have any likes and dislikes. Because the agitation comes from likes and dislikes. When most of the likes and dislikes are gone, if not all, what happens to agitation? They're gone. When the agitations are gone, what happens to the mind? Peaceful mind. Because mind is nothing but flow of thoughts. And the flow of thoughts is turbulent in our case because we have too many likes and dislikes. If the likes and dislikes are minimized, if not totally eliminated, then the mind becomes very peaceful, very quiet. In Vedanta, a totally peaceful mind is called no mind. So when you hear from your teacher, regular teacher, that the first thing we need to do is to destroy mind, not in the sense of the word destroy, but get rid of the agitations, destroy all the agitations. How? By seeing such a very simple but very obvious fact that we all have the same life spark. Different shape, size, name, forms, practices, food, this, that, but the same life spark is there. Based on our own traditions, we know it by different names. That's immaterial. The main thing is to understand that we, even though looking different and many, we are part of that whole. And now you have to understand that a part can never be separate and distinct from the whole. Think about it. Can it be? The part will always be part of the whole. It will always belong to the whole. It cannot be taken out of the whole. It always remains part of the whole. Yes, sir.
So, like, I'm hearing what you're saying and processing it and trying to understand, you know, some of the evils that are happening in the world. And when those occur, it's because those people want to be different.
We haven't touched upon a very, very important aspect of this travel from bottom to top. Beyond the intellect, we talked about seers and seen, right? Beyond the intellect, there's a very nasty entity called ego. When proper understanding and conviction comes, that ego that's running hither-thither, trying to create problems, now it is fully dedicated to the service of the Lord. When the ego is fully dedicated to the service of the Lord, the ego becomes pure. You have to have ego. Without that, you can't function. Because even when you role play, when you are playing a role of father, you say, I am the father. I am going to set the rules in the family. I am going to teach the kids how to follow the rules, blah, 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 blah. In that role playing, you are taking up the authority. That authority is your ego. So you need that in any aspect of life. But as you use that ego, always know that it's dedicated to the service of the Lord. And who is the Lord? We just discussed that. Who is the Lord? We are the Lord. We are the totality, that one single entity that appears as many. That's what we are. But then, because this restricted existence is given to us to play the role of a father, son, daughter, wife, friend, this, that, whatever. In that role playing, anything that we do must be dedicated at the feet of the Lord. Why do we say this? Because when we do that, there's no anxiety left as to what are going to be the results of what action we've taken. Our anxiety mainly always comes from performing an action and then waiting anxiously for the results. Think about it. Isn't that true? I wrote the exam, oh God, when is the result going to be? Oh God, 2 months, no result. Those 2 months are going to be so miserable for those who are waiting for the results of their exam, isn't it? I've gone through that many, many, many years back. Action is done in present. Results are always in the future. And we don't know what the future holds. So why would we get excited about something that we don't know? Granted, any action we perform, there will be a result. No question about that. You cannot avoid that, right? But that comes in some time in future, maybe tomorrow, maybe next day, maybe month later, maybe a year later. So worrying about the future is what causes anxiety in our life. And that comes because of this misunderstanding that I am the doer. I am the owner. I am the enjoyer. No, we are not. If I was the enjoyer, one day when this body is just lying on the ground, who is the enjoyer? Who is the enjoyer? Where did that enjoyer go? So I'm not the enjoyer. Somebody else within this restricted existence enjoys the world through use of this physical entity and the mental entity. Understood? So, the clear understanding of who we are is what subsides, if not eliminate, subside substantially the turbulent thought process. Makes it very quiet thought process, linear thought process. Those who have some kind of engineering background know that the turbulent flow is very hard to control. But when that same flow becomes linear in one direction, because turbulent flow is in 50 different directions, just like our mind, remember? It goes in, I'm sitting here and I close my eyes and I'm in India already. 10,000 miles. Didn't take even more than a second, I was there. So, that clear understanding that I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not this intellect. I am not the ego. I am the owner, the operator. That needs to be comprehended. And once the intellectual comprehension comes, if if it does not seem to make any change in our day-to-day life. Because that's the whole purpose. We have so many so-called problems, so many griefs in our life, which is what we want to get rid of. That's why we come to this class. Then we go home and we are the same again. So the first thing we need to understand is, I am the operator, the owner, the boss of all this. The body, the mind, the intellect, the ego, the memory. And I am the same in everything, in everybody. The experience and acceptance of totality, of which I am part, so it's your choice whether you want to think of yourself as this limited, constricted, miserable, troublesome physical entity, or you choose to be that all-pervading reality, that all-pervading life spark. Whatever name you give it is immaterial. Once you understand and comprehend that that is what I am, and if it's not making any changes in your day-to-day life, in your interactions with others, then meditation is required. Having come to that point, if we find it hard to see ourselves in everyone, like we do in our children, our spouses, etc., then meditation is needed. Because the meditation gets rid of this otherness. You sit and meditate on this simple truth. I am that one that appears as many. There are some beautiful hymns written to extol the glory of that wonderful self. So meditation is essentially done at this level of our sadhana, of our practice of spiritual practice. We have to be there. So does that mean that we can't do meditation? No. The idea is that each one of us have different ability to follow this path. Nobody's going to go with anybody. It's just not possible. Each one of us have our own paths to follow at our own pace, in our own way. Some might go straight, some might do this, some might go like this. As long as when we fall down, when we get up, as long as we get up, that is important. Falling, everybody falls. So what? Somebody falls 10 times, somebody falls 20 times, so what? But every time we fall down, if we get up, get moving again, keeping that goal as our focus, then the mind becomes eventually peaceful, quiet. And in that quiet mind, that oneness shines. That's when the meditation is done. If we are not at that level, then we still do meditation, but it's essentially called contemplation. What do we contemplate upon? The duality, the apparent duality in the world. And knowing very well intellectually that that is not the case. There is no duality. There is but that one whole oneness that appears as many. And therefore, we continuously contemplate upon that on a daily basis. You can call that meditation. Ultimate meditation is not an activity. Meditation, the word itself, meditation is not an activity. Meditation is a state of mind. Meditation is a state of mind. So if, I mean, we say very loosely, because, see, we have language as a tool. And that tool is so limited at times, particularly when you're a spiritual student. The language becomes a restriction, because how do you express certain things? That peace and quiet that reigns over you every so often, how do you explain that to anybody? You just can't. You just can't. Each one of us have to, quote unquote, experience it. Because to actually say experience it means there's duality. Experiencing connotes there is something other that I am experiencing. No, that is not the case. You're getting ready for a wonderful party and you are so well dressed and so wonderful. You have done nice hair and all that, and whatever this, what do you call this thing when you do your nails?
Manicure.
Manicure, pedicure, something like that. And you are so gorgeous looking. Now the only thing that's missing is the golden necklace that you want to wear to that party, because you want to show off, man. Now you can't find it. So you're running around the whole bedroom, the closet, even the living room, trying to find where is the necklace. And then your spouse comes and says, the necklace is in your neck. The necklace is already in your neck. So you were looking for something that was already there. You just didn't know it. Same thing is with us. We don't know it, we don't comprehend it, but it is us. And that meditation, sitting in meditation, with the peaceful mind focused on that one single thought, that I am the one. In every religious tradition, the same thing is explained in different words. In our scriptures, it is said, Amrutasya Putraha. You are the children of eternal life. Christianity, the Lord has said, you're born in His image, right? How come we don't behave like that? That is the problem. That is the problem, because we are so badly told that this is what we are. So continuously hammered upon us that this is what you are, that we forget who we really are. We don't have to become anything. We have to attain. We have to realize the necklace is in the neck. It's nowhere else. All the anxiety goes away. Happiness forever. Blissfulness. So the meditation is done because of this missing link, that I understand intellectually who I am, but somehow that change is not affected in my day-to-day life. What do I do? Meditation. That's when we do meditation. That's why the next chapter says, life is yours. What life? This role playing. We very clearly have to understand and comprehend that we only play roles. We are not that. Like a great actor, like Elvis singing Margarita. Has anybody heard that? Oh God, he's so good. He sings to, what's that beautiful French lady? She's gorgeous, oh my God. And he's singing to her, Margarita. Oh God, what a beautiful song. But if you go to Elvis and say, are you that? Or if you go to that actress and say, are you Margarita? She says, of course not. We're just playing the role in this movie. I'm not Margarita. I'm Rhonda Fleming or somebody. I keep forgetting the name. But you should, everybody should go on the internet and say, Margarita by Elvis. Oh God, it's such a beautiful song. You'll just love it. You'll just totally love it. It's very, very, very enjoyable. I'm, of course, very biased for Elvis. That's it. So, that's different. But the point is, well, role-playing should be played well. Because he has given you that to carry through this particular existence that we call life. And as long as we have this particular existence, we must play the role, as our Gurudev would say, play it with gusto. Like the great actors and actresses that play those roles, like the one in Gone with the Wind. How beautiful. But those were the roles. So while playing the roles, always at every moment, know yourself to be someone else than that role playing. You are that eternal spirit. You are that reality that pervades everywhere, in everything, in everyone. Then the love will be spontaneous. Then the love will be unconditional. If the love is not unconditional, then that's not love. That's attachment. Attachment is there because there are expectations. My son now is going to be a doctor. Now I'm going to be very happy. I'm going to retire, blah, blah, blah. He's going to have a big house and I'm going to go move in with him. And, no, you are not. Nursery. My son has done well in his education. Now he is a professional, let him live his life. When he comes and visits me, I'm very happy. When he goes back to wherever he's going, I'm very happy. I do not wait for his phone call every weekend. Mama is very upset because the baby hasn't called. He's not a baby, he's 40 years old, for God's sake. Don't we do this? We do this all the time. We create our own aggravation and then look up and say, why me? He has nothing to do. Poor guy, why do you blame him? Besides, he's not there anyway. He's not there. He's here. He's right there. So the meditation is to accept that this is role playing, but I'm not that one. I am the eternal. I am the one that pervades everything. I am the one that appears as many, but it's not. Like the waves of the ocean, it's your choice whether you want to call that whole experience as the ocean or the body of water, or you want to identify each individual waves as your existence. Your call. All grief that we experience is created by whom? Us only. So who can get rid of them? Only us. Nobody can ever, believe me, ever take your grief away. No. It's your choice. Unconditional love is the basis. Love everybody. Do not get attached to anyone. They come, you're happy. They go, you're happy. It's okay. When that mindset is developed, if you want to call it that, then meditation is very easy. Then meditation is just closing your eyes, sitting relaxed, with straight back, the neck and the back in the same straight line. And breathing very normally, you think of who you are. That's it. Shall we do that for about 7 minutes? Please. Relax. Sit straight, because we are all sitting on this chair. Try and have both your feet on the ground if possible. If not, then that's okay too. Relax. All the scriptures, they teach us that we are the eternal consciousness, existence, and bliss. We are not the body. We are not the sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, skin, tongue. We are not the organs of action. We reject the physical body as me. We also reject the mind, the emotional aspect. We also reject the intellect, the decision-making aspect. We also reject the ego, the sense of doership, enjoyership, ownership. I am not the physical body. I am not the subtle body. I am not the causal body. And therefore, I have no father, I have no mother, I have no sister, I have no brother, I am neither a friend nor a foe. I am not the air that I breathe. I am not the components of which this physical body is made of, the five fundamental elements. I have no likes and dislikes. I have no delusion, no greed. I am not jealous of anyone. I am not the fourfold. Activity called dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. I don't incur any sins. I do not experience happiness or sorrow. I don't do any pilgrimages. Thank you. I am neither the food nor the one that eats. I am that one without the other. I am that all-pervading entity that has no shape, no size, no name, no function. I am the Lord of what appears to be this universe, which is nothing but my manifestation. I have no bondage. I am eternally free. I am the truth absolute. I am the existence, consciousness, bliss. I am the auspicious one. I am the auspicious one. I am. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.